Coming up next on Tech News Today, Bitcoin gets knocked down in China. Will it get up again? Also, Wisconsin approves the $3 billion incentive for Foxconn's factory. Equifax executives decide now is a really good time to retire. Chrome will soon squash autoplay audio by default, and Futurama is back, sort of. All that and more coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CashFly.com.
This is Tech News Today, episode 1854, recorded Friday, September 15th, 2017. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life, and that's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/TNT. Hello and welcome to Tech News Today. This is the show where we sit down with some of the most passionate people in technology. You qualify, Father Robert, as one of the most passionate technology enthusiasts ever created.
This is all passion.
In the history of the world and the universe.
This is the extent. Yeah.
What you see here, this is called passion. I'm Jason. Obviously, Megan's out, but you are in Megan's place.
Yes, I'm Father Megan Maroney.
Did you check with Megan first before?
No, I'm probably going to hear about this after today. So
okay, all right. Well, we'll live it up while for now.
Exactly. You know, she's gone, so it means that the controls have been lifted a little bit. You don't know this, but Megan is a pretty hard hammer on this set. So yeah.
So Megan has the day off. I believe she's out on Monday as well. Not on the day off, but more working outside of Twit on assignment, let's say. So I'm stoked to have you along. Thanks for hopping in her place.
Thank you for asking me to come in. I love TNT. Again, it was the first show I was ever on at Twit. And it's got a special place in my heart.
It wasn't too long ago that I dove into my email and I found your submission when Tom was doing TNT way back when. I think this was like 2011,
That was painful to watch.
We did a fan kind of, what was it called? Open mic.
Yeah, like the holiday open mic.
Yes. It was like, hey, fans of the show, you could be on the show too to talk about technology. And you went one step further. You submitted a video instead of just an email saying you wanted to take part.
I was a giant kiss ass.
Right on. Well, I'm happy that you did that because now, you know, I've worked with you for so many years. It's awesome. All right, we've got news to talk about, so let's do that. We're going to dive in right now, starting with this. Beijing is cracking down on Bitcoin by ordering a stop to trading, as well as notifying cryptocurrency exchange users of the shutdown. No new registrations will be allowed, according to the government notice, and platforms are required to report to the government as to how they will enable users to make risk-free withdrawals. This comes as China is aiming to protect consumers from what it believes to be a highly speculative and risky market. This trading ceases at midnight tonight. I don't know if that's already passed or not. I probably should have checked that, but would cease at midnight this evening. What do you know? You have Bitcoin, right?
Oh yes, I've got a.
You're one step further than I.
I've got a few Bitcoins. I have a lot of Dogecoin. I'm a multi-million Dogenaire.
What does that amount to?
It's like 50 cents. I have cryptocurrency. It was just for giggles. But no, seriously, the one Bitcoin I had, when I got it, it was worth something like $26, and now it's worth $3,600, which is kind of ridiculous. But I'm pretty sure I still know where I kept it, because you do need the little log file. But we'll see. Here's the thing. We've actually seen this coming. People who have been analyzing the cryptocurrency market have known that something is up in China, because on the first of this year, China made it mandatory that fees had to be charged for the Bitcoin exchanges. Because there were no fees on the Chinese Bitcoin exchanges, they became the hotspot. Everyone wanted to do their trades there because no fees are better than fees. Mm-hmm. When that happened, you started to see sort of a drop in the number of transactions that were taking place on the Chinese exchanges. In fact, now it's down below 10%. So this will be a big hit, but not a killer hit. The cryptocurrency market will continue. The other part about the story, which is interesting, is it's a government being proactive in saying, we understand volatility. Volatility is good. That's what lets people make money on a market. Mm-hmm. But the volatility in cryptocurrency is ridiculous. You have to remember, last year, Bitcoin was at 500. This year it hit 5,000.
Yeah.
But it hit 5,000 and 12 days later it was under 3,000. So it's going to fluctuate like this. And if you have enough people who are invested in Bitcurrency, in cryptocurrency, and are using it like they were in China for startups, a fluctuation like that could wipe out trillions of dollars in capital immediately. And so China said, look, we can't do this. It's, you know, if you want to do it on your own, that's fine, but you're not going to do the exchanges here in China.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, speaking of volatility, the value of Bitcoin just in the past week, right, it was $4,318, right around there, $4,318 on September 8th. And then right now it's at $3,751, but that's after a low today, and I think a low in the past week of $2,951. So it's rebounded a little bit, but that kind of a swing just goes to show you just how crazy, like how different it seems Bitcoin is versus other places that you can put your money.
Precisely. And unfortunately, anytime you have this kind of fluctuation, you encourage a very high spec market, a very high, highly speculative market.
Yep.
And people look at this and they rightfully think, oh my goodness, if I invested $10,000 when Bitcoin was worth $20, how much of a millionaire would I be today? But then there's the other side, which is, well, today, your value, if you had invested that much, your value would have gone up and down by $10 million per hour.
Mm-hmm.
Can you really sustain that? You could if you're just holding on to Bitcoin. It's just like any kind of currency trading. If you're going to hold on to the long term, then the short term fluctuations don't matter. But if you're a startup like they had in China, using your Bitcoin base as the foundation for your startup capital, that could wipe you out. Literally, a daily fluctuation might wipe you out.
Right. Yeah. And, speaking of what you're talking about there, it was September 4th that China banned ICOs, initial coin offerings.
Well, we've seen a lot of those.
And that really sent the industry into even more chaos than it had seen before. So
you must have received a few of those, because I was receiving at least two or three ICO press releases every week.
Yeah, I got a few of those.
New coin we're creating. And a few of them were like, and if you cover us, we'll give you some of the coin. I'm thinking, oh my, this is horrible. This is horrific. But
it's gambling.
People see it. They hear coin.
Yeah.
They hear crypto, and it's okay, there's money.
Well, they see coin, they hear crypto, and then they look at the value of Bitcoin, and they go, seriously? It can do that?
Right. And they don't realize that Bitcoin and Ethereum are the extreme outliers. They are the cryptocurrencies that have done it more or less correctly, that people have stayed with. For every successful cryptocurrency, there are literally dozens of failed cryptocurrencies.
Like Doge?
No, actually, Doge is technically still alive. But, I mean, you can go to – I've got a list of all the dead cryptocurrencies.
Yeah, okay.
And most of them, they're just clones of each other. They took the same software, the same blockchain, and they just called it something else. And it was destined to fail.
You can have your own blockchain. You can have your own cryptocurrency. It's true. Just look under your chair. Another part of kind of the volatility, at least in recent weeks anyways, earlier this week, JP Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon. Demon?
Yes.
I'll call him Demon because called Bitcoin a fraud. This was on Wednesday. That sent the value down by 10%. He also said that it was sure to eventually blow up.
And the traditional economic side of me that's looking at how currencies develop agrees with that statement. Says, okay, this is when you have a market that's speculative, that's one thing. If you have a currency that is entirely speculation, that's another thing. And so by that terminology, Bitcoin should have imploded long ago. It hasn't. And the reason why it hasn't is because people are staying with it. People are continuing to say, okay, there might be some value in here that I can still extract.
Yeah.
These people are looking at on the far side, and they're saying at some point, all the value to extract out of Bitcoin will have been extracted, and then it will implode. Even then, it's a game of musical chairs. The last person out is going to make a lot of money.
Yeah, right. I knew you were the right person to talk about that, because still Bitcoin kind of confuses me because, and I've talked about it on the show many times, because I haven't actually participated in it. I've always feel like an outsider looking in. And maybe I just need to pull the trigger on one. But then maybe not. I don't know if I want to risk my money there either. Wisconsin state legislators have approved a $3 billion incentive package for Foxconn after the company announced its plans for a factory in the state last July that would employ at least 3,000 people. Now it's up to Governor Scott Walker to sign, which he will. Apparently, he's very outspoken on that. This is to be Foxconn's first United States factory, and the soon-to-be tech sector in Wisconsin already has its name, Wisconn Valley.
No, I'll just say no. Again, this is one of these phenomenons that we've seen for a while. You have to get past just the story because people are going to focus on this story and they'll be incensed because on its face, it sounds like a really bad deal. It was passed by a 64-31 vote. It's going to go to Scott Walker's desk. He's going to sign it. And here are the details. Over 15 years, Foxconn will get $2.85 billion in tax incentives in exchange for spending $10 billion to spin up a factory. Now, that factory can have as many as 13,000 workers.
Right.
But they're going to start with 3,000. So 3,000 workers earning about $54,000 a year plus benefits. There's also the ancillary effect, which is when you have a factory like this, it's going to draw in support businesses.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to come in and they're anticipating maybe about 20,000 or so extra jobs will be created by those. We had a financial watchdog group, nonpartisan. So all they do is they just look at the math and they calculated that if Foxconn hires the full 13,000, so not the 3,000, but 13,000. And if they generate not 20,000, but 22,000 jobs from all the ancillary businesses, it will take 25 years before the state of Wisconsin breaks even on the deal.
Wow.
That doesn't sound great. And that's the part that people are getting ticked at. But here's the other part, Jason. That's not the bet. The bet is that this will spark more investment, more companies coming in,
right.
Maybe Amazon, and then that will actually make back the money. So, it's hard to judge this.
Yeah, you say maybe Amazon. I mean, that's, prime time, right? Amazon's looking for a location for its second headquarters. They're looking at employing 50,000 people. It's a lot. I mean, no doubt, like you've explained, it's a lot up front and for a long time. But the amount of people, the level of improvement in, let's say, personal kind of wealth, that people are bringing to the area, spending in the area just to live there, could be a big deal. But you're right. It is kind of a gamble. This is the largest ever incentive package for a foreign company, not to mention 10 times larger than anything ever approved for the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about this on Twiet, and we understand it's a bet. And, and it's a big bet. But at the core of the bet is a proposition that I'm not sure if it's true, because we've seen it tried several times, and that is the recreation of the Silicon Valley. There's so many different parts of the world look at the Silicon Valley and they say, we want that. Whatever happened that turned this coast into such a hub of incredibly high finance and technology, we want to recreate that. And so they've tried it in Mumbai. They tried it in New York. They tried it in Illinois. They tried it in Moscow. They tried it in Israel. And each time they had the same effect, which is, they offered tax incentives. Businesses came in. And then at some point, the tax incentives stopped and the businesses went away.
And hey, we can get it cheaper if we offshore it.
Or if we go to the next Silicon Valley.
Yep.
And so the question is, and I would love to hear about what you think about this. Can you buy another Silicon Valley? Or was it just this incredible confluence of intelligent people, visionaries, companies and finance that just happened to land in the same area at the right time that created Silicon Valley?
Yeah. Well, like you say, they would all love to recreate that. But I think it's a lot harder than just, sinking a bunch of money and getting a few big names into the area to do that. You can create a tech hub, a tech sector and everything, but don't compare it to Silicon Valley. I feel like Silicon Valley as kind of like this massive behemoth of technology, innovation, whatever you want to call it, is kind of an outlier. Like, it's pretty crazy the amount of geography that is covered by technology here. It just kind of happened the way it happened. I don't know if you necessarily get that elsewhere, but I can see why they would try. And I don't think that they necessarily have to duplicate Silicon Valley. Technology is kind of the way it is, going forward. It's a very lucrative business and it's going to be around for a long time. So all these areas, like, who would have thought that, technology would, like, a hub of technology would be Wisconsin? But that's what they hope for. And I think there are a lot of other states that are going to hope for that, too. Just bring in business and technology, period. Don't shoot for being the next Silicon Valley, because it really is a combination of a million different things. Geography is very much included in that. Wisconsin versus, San Francisco Bay Area geography are very, very different, and they offer very different things. I don't think you get the same thing between both.
And there's another part about this, and tech people understand this because they've been covering this forever, which is tech works really well in the United States in some areas. Even if you're not the next Silicon Valley, Illinois and New York have actually created some decent Silicon Alleys or Silicon Valley clones. But factories are not part of the equation. Mm. I mean, in fact, you look at the large companies in the United States, they got rid of their factories. Intel still has one. AMD still kind of has one that they co-own. But they're not winning propositions. You cannot build stuff in the United States and get the cost breaks that you need to be able to be competitive on the market. I mean, Google tried this. Remember, Google I.O. was at 2011, and they made that little sphere thing. And it was entirely made in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And it died because they realized we could sell these for $300, which is $100
more. Which you're not going to sell those.
Yeah, exactly. You're not going to sell them. But we could sell it at $100 over the price it costs to make them, and we still won't make money.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good point. And I mean, especially when you're talking about factories, it's prime for automation, right? And suddenly the whole incentive of, hey, we're bringing all these jobs to the area kind of fizzles and goes away because, hey, we've also automated and lowered our cost and it behooves them to do so.
That's already been identified as a loophole in the contracts that are being drawn up, which is Foxconn, they have to start with 3,000 workers. But they could bring in heavy automation if they wanted to expand the plant. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't get the full tax incentives, but they already got the bulk of it.
Right.
So
and they're already rocking at that point,
Exactly.
And whatever partners, you know, move into the area to make deals, so they end up positioning themselves close to Foxconn and ends up being a really good strategic opportunity.
We'll see, though. I mean, I don't want to be negative. I will say this is a bet. It's definitely a bet. It seems to be a fool's bet. However, maybe they'll pull it off. And if they do, other states will copy the template.
Yeah. Well, it's going to take us a while to know whether they pull it off or not. You know, one of these days there will be nothing new to report on the Equifax drama. Sadly, today is not one of those days. Equifax continues to look inward after the monumental hack that left basically everyone listening and watching with little to no shred of personal identity to speak for those who were calling for accountability, you have this to hang your hat on. The company's chief security officer, Susan Malden, and chief information officer, David Webb, have officially retired from their positions. Yes. Retired, as in, I'm guessing, told to retire or else.
They've decided to spend more time with their families.
Mm-hmm. Coincidentally, right now, they decided this.
Yes.
So they decided to retire. Those changes are immediate. Were there any clues that maybe these people, like in advance, maybe they weren't totally qualified for these technical positions, Padre? What do you think?
Okay, I got to be really careful here because I know a lot of people who are in the security profession who maybe didn't study security. That wasn't their major. And they're incredibly good at their jobs because it takes a mindset and it takes experience more than it takes book learning. However, when you're looking at the actual resumes and the work experience of the people that they brought in to handle security, not only did they not formally study security, it looks like they didn't even informally know security. They thought security was keeping people out of the building, not protecting their networks and hardening them against attacks.
Right.
And as the details are starting to come to light, people are just every day it's like, oh, I didn't think it could get worse. It's worse. There's another level of incompetence. They didn't patch servers. They left them with default logins. At one point, one of them had the password of admin.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this was a corporation that was primed to have a huge breach because any script kiddie, not a serious attacker, not someone who spends their life looking for 0 days, but any script kiddie running an off-the-shelf attack package could have scanned Equifax's network and found a dozen vulnerabilities that would let them in. That's not good. I mean, that would be the first thing that any competent security officer should be doing. They should be always attacking their own network to find where those vulnerabilities are. And it seems like not just that it didn't happen at Equifax, it never happened. It wasn't even part of the equation. They didn't even know that that was good practices.
Which is bizarre. That's so bizarre. Like, I don't understand how this happens and how we got to here. I mean, there's a lot of people that are like, what, they got fired? Like, we're pushing for, you know, what happened after all the mortgage fallout in 2008 and the banks, you know, imploded. You know, we're pushing for people to go to jail. You know, there are people that feel really strongly about this, and I'm not sure where I stand on that, but it's mind-boggling how poorly this was handled, not just post, but prior. And obviously we wouldn't be here if it had been handled better prior, but even then there were a million little details that were like, really, that too? Like, it just doesn't make sense how a company that protects this valuable, this kind, and this massive amount of data did such a poor job of protecting it.
It's going to get worse, and it's going to get worse in this sense. Over the next couple of weeks, I'm already starting to see the chatter. People are uncovering facts about who worked at Equifax and why they got their job. Mm. This is actually one of the positions that they're looking at, and it looks like this was a favor. Like this was like old boys club reaching out and saying, oh, hey, I know you from so-and-so. Why don't you take this position?
Right.
I'm not competent. Doesn't matter. All you have to do is sit there and collect your salary.
Right.
Now, there's nothing illegal about that. They did nothing wrong. It was stupid. It was incompetent. It was irresponsible, but nothing illegal. So what you might start to see, if that same anger continues, if the rage of something has to happen to Equifax continues, you could see something with electronic security that we saw back in 2008 with the financial markets. Now, you can argue whether or not that was effective, but it did force lawmakers to start saying, this should be criminal. Mm-hmm. You know, if you are entrusted with this much information about the public, there have to be repercussions if you don't take that responsibility seriously. I'm betting at some point some senator is going to want to make his bones and we'll push forward a bill. It will get rejected a couple of times. And then there'll be enough of a public push to say, no, you have to do this. Half of us, half of the adult population of the United States is exposed because of these people. We want to make sure that if these people ever exist again in a different company, there's actual legal recourse for us to take rather than just being ticked because they were idiots.
Yeah, I mean, even U.S. Senator Elizabeth Warren has opened an investigation into this. So that's kind of what you're talking about is kind of already begun. So we'll see where that lands. Just so you know who's taking up the task now, Mark Rohrwasser is the international IT operations lead at Equifax. He takes over as CIO. And then Russ Ayers, who is the VP of IT, is now interim CSO.
Yeah, but the problem is that doesn't matter unless they actually give them the resources that they need. And it sounds like this is a major expenditure. This is
at
not
this point they do.
Hey, could you change the passwords? No, it's like, you're going to have to look at the actual infrastructure.
Yeah.
How are you storing data? Because from what we can gather, even the basic bits of security, like segmenting the database, making sure it's not relational, making sure it's encrypted, making sure that one faulty access point doesn't give someone access to the entire pile of data, those weren't being followed. And that's not an easy fix. And that's one of those things where it's like trying to change the engine in a car going 100 miles an hour down the freeway. You're in an active business and you're going to change how the data flows. Incredibly tricky, incredibly expensive.
Yeah, no kidding. But hey, the microscope is on them, so they kind of have to do that and make changes like encouraging people to retire. As it were.
Spend time with their family.
Coming up, we'll take a little time to talk about a small collection of Google news. It's our Google news segment that we just made up. But first, let's take a minute to thank Rocket Mortgage. They're the sponsor of this episode of Tech News Today. The mortgage experience, if you've gone through the whole experience, you know that it's not the easiest process in the world. It's not necessarily keeping up with the times. It was dated. It needed a client-focused technological revolution. And that's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage to make it easier for you to get a mortgage when you want. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence that you need when it comes to buying a home or even refinancing your existing home loan. It's simple. It allows you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. It's convenient, of course. Their trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. So you don't have to go digging for that information and find it in stacks of papers and reams all over the place. You don't have to do that with Rocket Mortgage. They made the deal so that they make that easy. It's powerful. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, Rocket Mortgage is able to perform thousands of calculations in seconds. Based on your income, your assets, your credit, Rocket Mortgage takes all that, analyzes all the home loan options for which you qualify, and then finds the one that's just right for you and lets you kind of take a look at them all and choose. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, just go to rocketmortgage.com/TNT. That's rocketmortgage.com/TNT. Equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states. NMLS consumeraccess.org number 3030. And we thank Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans for their support of Tech News Today. Sure, the trend might be towards autoplay videos on sites with the audio turned on, and let me tell you, I detest that trend. Well, apparently so does Google, because the company announced that beginning next year, the Chrome browser will mute the audio of any autoplay video content on a page unless the user has specifically granted permission for it. Users will begin to have control over muting specific sites of their choosing, starting with Chrome 63 sometime this year. And by Chrome 64, it will broaden out to only autoplay audio on all of the sites that a user visits when the user says it's okay to. So explicitly saying, yes, it's all right for me to get audio streamed automatically from this site. You have to kind of interact with the page, and that's like the signal that tells Google that you actually want that. So if you, from what I understand, if you navigate to the page and you don't touch a single thing on the page, I don't know if that includes scrolling, but if you don't like interact with anything on the page, then that's a signal to Google that you should not get that audio.
I have to say, this is a long time coming. This is the move towards whitelisting rather than blacklisting. We've been in the blacklisting era for the longest time, which is when something bad happens, I do something about it. Mm-hmm. This should be, no, look, believe it or not, most people on the internet visit the same 30 sites over and over and over. Occasionally you'll go someplace else because it links there, but your main landing page is, I'd even say, is a dozen for most people. Well, okay, on those dozen sites that I trust, that I visit all the time, I can whitelist all the different services I want, but I don't want such and such a site to suddenly start auto-playing music, auto-playing videos, auto-popping up. This has been something that I've wanted. But, Jason, I want to get your opinion on this. This stops things from making sound, which is nice because both of us often have a lot of tabs open at any given time. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't actually stop the auto-running. Data still gets pulled. And that bothers me because a lot of times I'm on my mobile connection of tethered to my laptop. That sucks down data that it shouldn't be.
Yeah, I mean, I'm mixed on that because sometimes I do like, well, no, what it is sometimes I get sucked into it, right? Like when I hit a site and there's video running, like some content creators have gotten really good about like automatically baking in subtitles on their content, right? Because that's how they that's how they kind of get you, right?
Because they know they're going to be muted and they're like, we just have to get his interest a little
bit. Right, right. And, I'm fully guilty of hitting the site, seeing that video and getting totally suckered into the subtitle thing. And sometimes I actually find something that was really interesting and informing and whatever. But by and large, I'm just not a huge fan of autoplay.
No.
And you're right. It really does sound like what this is just keeping it muted. It's still not going to stop the playback automatically. Google said in their kind of release about this, autoplay audio content uses data power and makes unwanted noises for the user. But I can't see how this helps with the data and power option because that's happening. It's just keeping it muted. So that's kind of a moot point, or maybe they were just trying to make a general point. But yeah, it's also interesting when you consider kind of Google's announcements very recently around ad blocking. Right. Google also plans to build in an ad blocker in a Chrome. It's going to hold ads on pages to a certain standard of quality. Otherwise, it's going to block them. That arrives early 2018. So this is kind of happening in tandem together. When you consider that Chrome controls around 54% of the browser market worldwide, and Google's essentially assembling its own list of good publishers with good ads, you end up in this world of like, are they blocking the ads of competitors? And how do we feel about that?
That's absolutely going to be litigated in the courts.
Yeah.
There's no way around it, but I think every real internet citizen, so the people who we spend a lot of our time connected to the net, we know the difference between a decent advertiser and a crappy advertiser. You know, we know when someone is just trying to trick us into a click. Well, my pet peeve right now, I got two of them, ads that auto run when your mouse runs over the top of them, but they load late. So it doesn't look like there's actually an ad there until it's too late and you've run your mouse over it. And now it thinks you've granted it permission to run.
Yeah, right.
I hate that.
Yeah.
The second one is, and this is Reuters is doing this, which ticks me off because Reuters is my primary source for news. They tend to be the most neutral. But if they have a video on one of their stories, it will autoplay. And you can pause it, but then if you try to scroll down, it takes the video and puts it over the top of the text.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of like, wait, why why would you do that? Because, I mean, now you're deliberately trying to annoy me. You're actually trying to obscure your content, which means...
That's weird.
I don't even want to wait the 5 seconds it's going to take for me to skip an ad.
Yeah.
I think we have to get back to a time where people understand that an ad, watching the ad, being advertised to, is the price we pay for some great content. But at the same time, the advertisers have to realize that, yeah, there are going to be some people who skirt what you're trying to do, but don't destroy the experience for everybody else just mm-hmm. because that's happening.
Yeah.
And Google can help that. I mean, Google can provide guidelines. And yes, they are going to get sued, but I think they're in the right on this one.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. They also have their, is it contributor or where you can basically pay them and they will block certain ads, but you're paying them and that part of that money, I don't know if all of it, it's Google, so probably not all of it, goes to the publishers on the other end. But again, that's Google more and more controlling, you know, like there's a lot of third party ad blockers out there and a lot of people use them. This is Google's way to be like, no, we want control of your ad blocker too. And I mean, we're at a very interesting, and I've been talking about it with Megan a lot on this show, interesting point of inflection right now for technology.
Yes.
And actually the next story totally ties into it, where technology is getting, I mean, for lack of a better term, like too big for its britches almost. And people are starting to be like, you know, point fingers and be like, you know what? It's got to change. At least people are being aware about it. And whether that's going to change or not, I guess that remains to be seen.
They call it the Apple syndrome because Apple has gotten away with, for good reason, with many years saying, you don't actually know what you want. We know what you want. And they've guessed right more than they've guessed wrong. They've been very good about that. But other tech companies are like, oh, well, if Apple can do it, we can do it. And it's like, no, you're not Apple.
Yeah, we'll give Apple a pass on that. How Apple is that?
both of us went to MWCA, Mobile World Congress America.
Yep.
And okay, the first year, it was rough. I'm going to be honest. It was a very, very rough conference. Hopefully they'll do better next year. But there was one company there. I don't know if you saw them. Their business model is that you can choose the advertisers that can reach you. And then you also share part of the advertising with the charity of your choice, which sounds great. But then I actually started looking at their business model, and what they do is it's a plugin for your browser for Chrome, and it will strip out the ads that are coming in, and it will put in its own ads in that place. And I'm thinking, you were going to get sued into non-existence within a month. I think it was like AirPlay or something like that. Did you happen to see that?
I didn't see that, but that reminds me of Brave Browser, which is doing very similar things. Where it's, you know, basically like, hey, you know, you browse with the Brave browser, we'll replace the ads with our own ad network. And I don't understand how that's you're going to love it. It improves your experience, you know.
Because it's us and you like us because we've got a cool name.
Last month, Google banned the Gab social media platform from its Google Play store, saying that it violated the company's hate speech policies. This happened as part of the tech fallout that followed the violence in Charlottesville. And also, of course, the firing of Google employee James Damore, who penned the infamous, now infamous, manifesto. Now, Gab is suing Google, charging that the company violated federal antitrust laws in the process of removing the network from its services. Gab has a post on Medium called Gab Declares War on Google, says that Google is using third-party content within the service to justify its removal. And their attorney, Mark Rendaza, says Google's conduct violates antitrust laws, basically saying Google Play and Android have monopoly power in the App Store market, and Google's apps YouTube and Google Plus compete directly against Gab. And so this is basically Google taking out a competitor based not on the company's kind of operations, but on the conduct of its users.
Right. Now, this puzzles me. I mean, there's so many things about the story that hit me, but this centers around what was it called? Policy 230. It was part of the 1986 Telecommunications Act, which essentially allowed common carriers to get away with not being responsible for what their users might do. And that actually makes sense. We've also called it safe harbor.
Right.
In other words,
got it.
If you're a common carrier and someone does something outlandish on your service, as long as you react appropriately, you can't be held responsible. Gab is kind of claiming the same thing. They're like, look, we made a communications platform. Some people abused it. And, you know, maybe we didn't deal with it the way that you wanted us to deal with it. But, you know, we believe we were being responsible. Google has to use the same provision. They're using 230 as well. So it's strange to see one user of provision 230 reach out and say, no, you can't use provision 230. And for me, that strikes me as the strangest part of the story.
Yeah. CEO Torba says this may be a David and Goliath fight because, you know, he's pointing out the obvious fact, which is that Google has a heck of a lot more money for the fight than Gab does. But he says, but remember, David won.
Yeah, but let me remind David here, or Gap, that Goliath has a ton of money, and they won't be dropping the lawsuit at any time in the near future.
Yeah.
I think, no, Gab's not going to win here. They can't. They're not going to make any headwind. The only thing they can hope for is that they'll find a sympathetic ear in a politician who wants to make points by pushing against Google and the supposed monopoly.
They very well could do that.
And they could.
I mean, there's a whole upheaval right now. It kind of ties in with our last story around the you know, kind of free speech of these big tech companies and how they're taking, how companies like Google are taking their own internal personal politics and applying them to their services. And, you know, people obviously who would use a service that is built around the ideas of free speech. And, you know, a lot of the users that have come over to Gab, you know, some of them are controversial, you know, right wing, alt-right, you know, that sort of crowd. Some of them kicked off of Twitter.
Yes,
so they're looking for a platform. I mean, this is all bubbling up right now.
And I mean, I understand that. And I'm very sensitive to issues of free speech. That's, you know, it's one of the things that I love. I mean, I get really incensed anytime it seems as if there's an abuse. However, these companies and individuals in general invoke a violation of free speech far too often. You know, what you are guaranteed by the Constitution is that the government won't come after you for something you say.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that other individuals have to put up with it. If Google creates acceptable use policies for their Play Store, and if they tell everyone that they're operating under the same rules, then they should be safe and they're in the right. It doesn't matter if the rules don't make sense to one or two or a dozen of the players. If everyone is operating under the same rules, then it's not a monopoly and it's not an abuse of your free speech. Mm-hmm. Now, Gab could come in here and say it's a functional monopoly. It's much like Comcast that we have in the United States right now, in that they make up so many of the apps that are sold and they control so much of the communications around the world that they have to operate under a different level of responsibility. But if that's what they're claiming, then the burden of proof is on them. They are in uncharted waters. That has not been done before. We don't have any laws to support that. We're talking about entirely new legislation. And if that's the case, Gab definitely doesn't have enough money to see this through to the end.
Yeah, interesting. And finally, in this Google trifecta, Lyft continues to benefit from the Uberfication of Uber's business. And in this case, Uberfication means the incessant need to continually do stupid things. Alphabet and Lyft are reportedly in talks, according to Bloomberg, that could result in a $1 billion investment from Alphabet to Lyft. Alphabet CEO Larry Page and other top-level executives are reportedly leading the push for investment into the company. And this is kind of interesting because Google early on invested in Uber. So I don't know if this is hedging bets or realizing that obviously, you know, Google or /Alphabet/Waymo, they've got some pretty contentious things happening with Uber right now. And Lyft, you know, has benefited greatly from kind of this Uber fallout that's happened over the course of this year. Right now, Uber has raised $2 billion. This would be another $1 billion on top of that. And when you think about what they've done so far, that's an insane investment. That would be huge.
Yeah, it really is. And there is I'm going to go off on a tiny little tangent here, then we can come back to the Uberfication. But can you imagine what would Uber look like right now? What would the ride-sharing industry look like right now if Uber hadn't made 30 missteps over the last 2 years? I mean, it's been bad press after bad press. And it's to the point now where if in my feed, my news gathering thing, I see Uber, da-da-da-da, I'm always thinking, okay, is this the previous story or is this a brand new story? It's probably a brand new story. It's probably something else horrible that they've done.
Yeah.
In fact, you know, we just heard about Uber saying, yeah, we may have been using our software to identify government officials. And that the hits just keep on happening. And at some point, you have to wonder, what does it take to kill a company? know, there is an alternative. Lyft actually works quite well. What does it take before someone steps in and say, "Hey, Uber, you've betrayed the public trust too often. You need to go away."
I think people are really used to. So I think to a certain degree, a lot of users and riders of Uber probably aren't even that aware of what's happening from a company perspective on the back end, or don't care enough to pay close attention to it. Lyft is also doesn't have as much of an international presence as Uber. Yep. That's one thing that this this investment would really be a big boon for Lyft, for getting them more into international markets. And I think people are just like, they're used to what they're used to. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's hard to break habit when you've been using a service like Uber for years. You know it. You got to be really swayed based on the politics and the bad decisions to decide to put your foot down and change. And I think a lot of people are just fine to stick with it.
You're going to stick with it. However, I mean, I'm an optimist, and I think that human behavior can be changed for the better. We've seen it.
Absolutely.
I have to reach back a bit to find a really good example. But I remember when I was a kid, everyone threw away aluminum cans. Everyone. No one recycled.
Yeah.
And then, you know, within the span of, I'd say, 7 years, it became, why would I throw it away? Of course I'm going to put it in a recycling bin. Mm-hmm. And even though most people maybe didn't understand why they were doing that, it just became the norm. This could be the same thing. It's like, look, you need to patronize companies that do the right thing. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't, then all you're complaining about companies that do the wrong thing is BS and doesn't make any sense. You know, that needs to become part of the public discussion. It's like, okay, I hate it when this company does this. That sounds horrible. All right, what are you doing to punish them?
Mm-hmm.
Or what are you doing to make sure that they correct their ways? Because unless there's something attached to the rage,
right,
then you're just raging into the wind.
Right.
I really want to see that. I want
just raging
so
into
much.
The series of tubes. That's all you're doing.
A series of tubes through which, like, horses and bets go. Oh, Ted Stevens, we miss you.
Rage against the series of tubes. I would agree, right? Like, I mean, we're very used to seeing a lot of outrage and everything online. How does that translate to the real world? Yeah. And I think for a lot of people, it doesn't. It's like, yeah, I'm furious and I want them to know it, but I'm still going to use them because they're in my market and Lyft is not, or whatever, you know, any number of reasons. It would take a lot of inconvenience to upend that and try to find a solution.
Maybe this is
an alternative.
Maybe this investment gives Lyft what they need. I mean, because Lyft can't really compare toe to toe with Uber. They just don't have the resources. They don't have the market cap. They don't have the range. Getting something like a Google behind them, mm-hmm, that is willing to actually put up the resources to help them get that, maybe they can actually become a viable alternative to Uber. And if that's the case, then it's not just you should do the right thing. It's you should do the right thing. Oh, and by the way, this service is actually better. And I think we as people understand that a bit more.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we talk about it a lot. So we are, you know, tuned into it on a regular basis. And I just think there's a lack of awareness for a lot of people, too. Yeah. TNT's fan of the day is Noble Ackerson. How's it going, Noble? It's been a while. I've actually had Noble on All About Android in the past, who sent us this video. He actually says, in my best Mike Elgin impression, "Hey, Jason Howell, this is how I TNT in my temporary office." And Mike, if I'm sure most of you remember, previous host of this show, is known by many as the digital nomad traveling the world and making all of it his office. Noble, you've learned from the master.
I love this. Actually, I think I know where that is.
Where?
That looks like somewhere like the North Shore of Hawaii. There's a couple of resorts there. No. The pool is all wrong. Never mind. I'm sorry.
Wherever it is, it looks glorious. It looks like the right place to work.
It looks a lot nicer than Petaluma right now. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup. You can post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook and use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT, and we will find it. Finally, we have an animation twofer for you.
Woohoo!
First, good news, everyone. Futurama is back. You can't do a Futurama story without saying that. But this time, the new episode is a radio drama, meaning, you know, you got to use your imagination and stuff. Nerdist creator Chris Hardwick nagged Futurama co-creators Matt Groening and David Cohen for a few years to do a collaboration. Apparently, he's really good at nagging because the full 40 some odd minute audio only episode is hosted on the Nerdist site and of course on YouTube. It's glorious in all the ways that Futurama has always been glorious.
You're not going to get me again. Futurama, fool me once, shame on me. Fool me six, seven times. How many times have you been canceled? You can't do it.
This well, is not coming back permanently.
No, but
it's just okay. An extra episode.
Look, that's what they said when they released the one-off movies, and then like they came back for another two seasons.
Yeah,
You're going to come back. It's a zombie show. It's a great show. I love that show. I watched every episode of that show at least three or four times. And this makes me so happy in the cockles of my heart, and I'm expecting it to come back in some way, shape, or form in the future. After
Groening's moved on, he's working on his Netflix show Disenchantment, which is basically Futurama but in the fantasy realm. That's probably a horrible way to pitch it, because I'm sure if you told him that, he'd be like, "No, it's totally different." But let's be real, it's so, kind of like if what Futurama was for sci-fi, it sounds like in Disenchantment is going to be for fantasy.
No. No, Futurama, come back.
I'm curious to see what else you can come up with. Groening never does wrong. Does Groening ever do wrong?
No. Well, a lot of people thought that Futurama was him going wrong,
but that was wrong.
Futurama was beautiful. It was a wonderful show.
It did. You know what? I remember that. Initially, it was, you know, but the thing about Groening, he's so good with his characters. Their team is so good with their characters. It takes a little bit of time. It's like a good HBO show. Don't judge an HBO show on the first episode or two. Do the season. And then at the season, you're hooked. You know, you're like, okay, I get the characters now. I get the development. It's kind of the same for Groening's development.
It reminds me of this. There is an episode in Futurama. I can't remember the season, but it was the one where Fry uses his tax refund to drink 100 cups of coffee. At one point, Hermes and his son, they spend their tax rebate on getting stilts. And he has 2 pennies left. And he gives it to his son and said, "Here's 2 pennies. And he goes, "Oh, great. I'm going to use it to buy 10 chairs of Amazon.com. And it kind of dates it. It's like, yeah, for a long time, Amazon was the joke of Wall Street. And then it became a powerhouse.
Oh, my goodness. Powerhouse is an understatement. One of the powerhouses. If you want to find this audio episode, it's actually really good. I haven't listened to the full thing, but I turned it on and I had a hard time turning it off because I had to work. But Futurama, Worlds of Tomorrow, Radiorama.
Go watch it.
Look for it.
Or
watch
it,
or listen to it and look at this image.
Yeah, watch that as you're listening to that.
And second, if you still watch South Park and you own an Amazon Echo or a Google Home, then you probably already know all too well how Trey Parker and Matt Stone, the creators of South Park, decided to troll you in the premiere episode of season 21. They learned from the best, and apparently the best is Burger King. Because the entire episode was littered with voice commands for the characters' home assistants, which means not only did their devices capture those commands, so did those watching the episode that have those home assistants installed in their homes. It added things that you definitely don't want to add to your shopping list. It set an alarm for you for, I think, 7 a.m.
Indeed.
You're welcome. Some said that it set off their device 15 times before they had to turn it off because they couldn't finish the episode while leaving it plugged in.
Yeah. I will say this. Burger King, South Park, we were messing with voice assistants before you even knew what a voice assistant was.
So much so that we thought it was... We went through the three stages of voice assistant messing with. We did it accidentally. We enjoyed it. And then we repented because people hated it. We went through all those emotional states by the time you figured it out and made it a joke. Yeah. So we were there first.
We'll just say this to South Park and Burger King. You're welcome.
Exactly. Padre, this was a lot of fun. Thank you for sitting in for Megan today and talking tech.
You. Anytime. This is my favorite show on the network. And anytime I get to chat with either you or Megan, it's a barrel of monkeys. Does that still scan? Do people still understand that?
I don't know. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Mario says yes.
Gaggle of puppies. I don't know. Whatever. It's great.
I think I understand what you're saying. You enjoy playing with barrel monkeys toys. That's what you're saying, right?
Oh, wow. Wow.
Like, you do know, you remember those?
Half of our audience doesn't.
I know.
Have no idea what you're talking about.
I know. Totally.
Go look it up.
Let's keep
Google it.
Let's keep dating ourselves here. So we did an episode, me, you, and Megan yesterday from Know How.
The Equifix. So if you want to know what you need to do to take care of yourself in these uncertain financial times because a major corporation has released your sensitive financial information, connection into the dark web.
That'll never happen.
That will never happen. You need to go to twit.tv/KH. The last episode, we did an Equifix. We explained what a credit fraud was, a fraud alert, what a credit freeze is, and then we showed you some apps that you should probably be using to make sure that everything is okay in the money front. So there it is.
Same set, different backdrop.
Know-how episode 344.
Right on. Padre, appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
A lot of fun. TNT records live every Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, 2300 UTC at twit.tv/live. You can be part of the show by emailing us at tnt@twit.tv. Leave us a short voicemail if you like, 260-TNT-SHOW. And you can find us on Twitter. The show is at TechNewsTodayTV. But really, the most important thing is subscribe. That's how you know you're going to get every single episode of TNT. And you can subscribe to all of our shows if you go to twit.tv. But this show is at twit.tv/TNT. And if you want to tweet at me, I'm at Jason Howell on Twitter. Thanks to our technical director and editor, Kevin. Thanks to Mario for helping out in the studio. Also, Patrick, I think, was in here helping out. So thank you, Patrick. And thanks to you for talking tech with us today. We'll see y'all on Monday. Have a great weekend. Bye, everybody.
Yeah. What?